And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, as I struggle to make the CD decks work here. This is 11 o'clock, more or less straight up, at 96.3, and we're going to be going directly into the November 4th, 2001 edition of Bathrob Spears Broadsides, with or without this CD player. I'm glad you're with us this morning. So hang with us, and we'll see if we can get the equipment to join in. Welcome again and again and yet again to Bathrob Spears Broadsides, Civil Rights for the Poor, on the air here at 96.3 FM, 2.5 hours of me and my guests, and maybe you, if you want to jump on the air with us. A call-in number, in case you've got a pencil handy or a good memory, is 427-3772, 427-3772, or 427-FRSC, and FRSC, of course, are the letters of our station, Free Radio Santa Cruz. Broadcasting uncensored and undaunted for the last 6 years, more like 6.5 or almost 7 years, here in Santa Cruz. We will play what you have to say, at least I will on my show, particularly if it's pertinent to what we're talking about, civil rights for folks on the street. We're going to have two guests in the studio shortly. They're getting ready to power up, as we say, Becky Johnson and Chaim Levin, both homeless activists here in Santa Cruz who have recently been distributing informational literature in front of Emily Riley's Good Things to Eat bakery. She's the councilwoman who voted no on the homeless in terms of criminalizing their vehicles at Harvey West Park at night, parked there from 5 to 7. There are new signs going up along that area at the behest of anti-homeless, I gotta say, bigots, frankly, although I like Don Hubbard. He's a nice guy, but I think what he's doing is a form of bigotry, and I'm not afraid to say that to him directly, and I'll say that to over the air as well. Don's a nice guy, but he needs to talk to homeless people. He needs to talk to homeless organizations before he criminalizes homeless people and does his that kind of proposal to the city council. And the city council needs to even more talk to homeless people as well. So anyway, Emily Riley's bakery has been the subject of a protest. I guess it was the fifth or sixth day out there, though not consecutive. You go out there between 8:30 and 10:30 on a morning, you're likely to see this big sign with two activists holding it up and a third one or even a fourth one wandering the sidewalk offering literature to people in cars and people on the sidewalk, and you'll hear the occasional boisterous shout, "Emily Riley votes against the poor, ask her why." That's what's been happening, and it's particularly pertinent at this time because we are going into the winter, and homeless people, though they may get the armory shelter a little early or perhaps at the usual time, that's only 160 floor spaces, counting the churches, for 1,000 to 2,000 homeless people. The rest of them face $54 citations, or more important, criminalization under the city's camping and sleeping bans, which remain in force in spite of a clear, quote, progressive majority. We've had three votes last year for safe sleeping zones, and there are two more, Porter and Riley, on the council, yet Riley and Porter are voting for right-wing positions on homeless issues, as well as not voting at all or bringing things up on other matters that affect a lot of us, like rent control, community control of police, Frank's statement about the war in Afghanistan, which I suppose I will... My opinion is just that my own view, but... I see it creating a lot of homeless people in Afghanistan, and I see the City Council of Santa Cruz not stepping up to the plate on this issue. I know it doesn't control foreign policy, but it can make a statement of principle. It has in the past, and I'm wondering what is stopping it now. And I've talked about this at other times. And I'm going to be reading, actually, a proposed resolution to City Council circulated by students at the University of California at Berkeley that didn't even get read before the City Council that I'm aware of when I heard the taped discussion. Of that issue at the October 23rd meeting, I heard today afterward. And that, I think, is important for us to consider because there is another council member coming, a council meeting coming up on November 13th. So, well, I'm going to play a little selection for us here, and then I'm going to, if we can get this machine to work, of course, always a challenge. And then we're going to zero in to our guests who come in from a cold, well, and actually it's a pretty sunny morning out there in front of Emily's bakery, and they got some of her coffee, if you can believe that. I even said hi to Emily, and she said hi to me, and neither of us were very high, but we said hi, and, you know, she looked pretty grim this morning, and perhaps she should be grim because she's casting grim votes that are having grim consequences on homeless people. We'll be back with a discussion of that issue with two individuals who have been actually organizing that protest, Becky and Chaim, in just a moment. And again, phone lines are open in case you want to call in, 427-3772. I'll keep my eye on the flashing light on the instrument panel here so that if I see you calling, I will stop all their activities and attend to you, generally speaking. That's my priority here, the public, at Free Radio when I do my show. So stay with us, and away we will go.
Downtown. muffled sound of injustices drowned out by the boom, boom, boom of tricked-out Impalas and cherried-out mini-trucks as the catcalls of the present are heard up and down Santa Clara Street. And beautiful Latinos strut by on St. Steve in midnight blue Buick Rivieras with gold smokes and silver crucifixes hanging from the rearview mirror. Downtown when you're brown on a Friday night, all the signs say no cruising zone, but what they really mean is no fucking Mexican zone. Because SJPG will pull you over for being downtown and brown, and for no other reason, and you will find yourself at the corner of 27th and Santa Clara at a McDonald's parking lot, surrounded by four police cruisers, while two pigs in SWAT gear search your car illegally, and a third one frisks you. And now I'm not talking about no pussy little frisk like you see in front of a club. I'm talking about a real motherfucking frisk like they do on cops when they tell you to spread your legs, put your hands on the hood of the car, and they pat you down so good you think you're getting a hand job. And you know, if they don't find nothing on you, if they don't find nothing on you, oh shit, look out downtown, but somewhere someone's getting arrested for being brown.
And that was Grito Serpentino, downtown. Certainly not in Santa Cruz. Luckily, we have very few of those darker-skinned people here, and those that are kept under control by the police department and don't speak up too much. And when they do and ask for guards, safeguards against racial profiling, they are ignored by the Citizens Police Review Board, the police department, and the Santa Cruz City Council. If you wish to get more information on this, you can always give a call to Councilmember Christopher Crone, 420-5020, and then you can get his actual extension number. You go into a voicemail system at City Council, 24-hour number. Crone initially was in favor of community control of police, and he came out, I guess it was 3 years now ago, for some kind of response to the shooting of Happy John Dine and police murders throughout the country. And actually, he and Keith Sugar were at the town clock encouraging people to do something about that. That was the last thing around community control of police in any significant way that they ever did. And they had just gotten into office. I guess one picture on the Sentinel and a little criticism by the police department were sufficient to turn them right around. And that's a real sad thing. But you can always call and buck up their sagging spirits, 420-5017, and tell them to take some real moves. For example, Crone has not made his appointment to the Citizens Police Review Board. I've suggested he appoint me. Why not? I'd be happy to actually demand some real public hearings on important issues around police review, and I would encourage people to actually come to these meetings and do something real. But the chances that Crone will nominate me and the chances that city councils are even less that they will appoint me, they're minuscule. But Crone would show that he actually is interested in real police review if he did that, which I'm pretty sure he won't do. But you can always call and urge Crone to appoint Norse to the Citizens Police Review Board, 420-5020, and then wait for the extension and get Christopher Crone, who will be our mayor in late November when council has its second meeting. Well, waiting long enough in the wings, we have two activists here who have been actually active. Camp Paradise folks who are struggling to maintain a clean and sober campground against city council pressures, the pressures of dark, deepening cold and earlier dark, and of course increasing numbers of people who are homeless on the streets of Santa Cruz, census bullshit notwithstanding. If you saw the recent paper on the census, it's not true. Census, there's actually been an increase, significant increases in homelessness in Santa Cruz in the last decade. Camp Paradise activists have done some tabling on the streets of Pacific Avenue, but not a lot, and I'm concerned that at the next council meeting, November 13th, Camp Paradise may well be swept away because they need strong community support and they need to be organizing, and indeed I think they're somewhat demoralized. But folks who are not demoralized are out there speaking not just on behalf of folks at Camp Paradise, not speaking on their behalf, of course, but they're speaking in order to encourage people to support civil rights of all homeless people. Our activists, Becky Johnson and Chaim Levin, who should really belly up to the mic and talk real close, and we'll see if we actually have you on a working mic. Go ahead.
Hey, Robert.
Hey, that seems to work.
Hello, Robert.
That's a, oh boy, mics have gotten very sensitive here.
A little too well.
Wow, you're in the red. So there you are, and I guess you've been out there at Emily Riley's. We've talked a little bit about this on Thursday, that there was a protest for at least five or six days now out there in terms of one, not necessarily one day after another.
I think this was our fifth time at the at Emily's Bakery.
And
we were there from 8:30 to 10:30 this morning with our big banner that says, Emily Riley's votes hurt the poor.
And you, I guess for the first time today, mentioned you were getting a lot of positive response from people honking and shouting right on, and your occasional We Love Emily shouts as well, right?
Yeah, I think that a lot of people have probably read the Metro Santa Cruz, which had a very good article about the Emily's votes, both with the Harvey West parking restrictions that we estimate will banish about 30 homeless people from an area where they're not legally parked particularly, in the sense that if they're sleeping in their vehicles after 11 p.m., they are violating the camping ordinance. But her vote, and this was in September, was to install 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. no parking signs 7 days a week, allegedly for street sweeping. Of course, we since there are no other streets in the city of Santa Cruz, including Pacific Avenue, that get daily street sweeping, this was a very... obvious that the purpose
custom
of it
made.
Is
there's
to sweep the poor away.
Showing special attention to homeless people.
That's certainly who it would affect. And I think some of the comment from Don Hubbard, who's the executive director of the Harvey West Business Association.
Actually, the Harvey West Residential Association, he points out. Go ahead.
And he complained about... homeless people in their vehicles, but the complaints he had didn't have anything to do with them sleeping in their vehicles. He claimed that one of the managers at Costco had been intimidated by the homeless people there when he attempted to take a photograph of some of the vehicles on the street. They complained that there had been a problem with some of the RVs emptying out their sanitation tank in the street. Which, of course, is illegal and could have been just fined individually if they had chosen to go that direction. But no, they were lobbying to have no parking signs to allegedly 24 hours a day on those particular streets.
Or overnight, perhaps, like they have at the Homeless Services Center nearby, right?
Something like that would make it impossible for homeless people in their vehicles to park there and sleep. Of course, you know, these streets are in the industrial section of the town. These are some of the few streets that are not in front of businesses or residences, and that is why the homeless people have parked there, because they don't want to disturb businesses or residences. And these are in the exact same areas that in May of 2000 the city council voted on a first reading to establish safe zones for homeless people living in their vehicles in this area. So, I mean, how far we've backtracked is part of the issue that we're there for. We're in front of Emily's Bakery because of Emily Riley's particular votes.
Let me interrupt
Harvey
you for
West.
A minute here, Becky.
Yes, sure.
Because, I mean, you know, this is all very well. Let's give you the voice of the critical public, perhaps, or I'll play critical public person here. Yeah, it's all very nice to say, you know, that what are you suggesting, that the homeless people own the streets and they have a right to set up housekeeping along the sides of public streets, which other people pay more taxes than most homeless people. I mean, homeowners actually pay more money probably than transient people to take care of those streets. And, you know, where don't you think we should get a vote of the neighborhood? Tim Fitzmaurice suggested this 3 years ago, before we let homeless people sleep in their vehicles on these streets. I mean, isn't some respect due to the folks out there?
Well, property owners and homeowners only pay like 1% of their the value for property taxes for all public services. I would argue that homeless people pay a larger percentage of their income in taxes than housed people do, just in sales tax. So a lot of homeless people do have jobs and also pay income tax as well. So I don't think that holds much water, that some people are taxpayers and others aren't. Homeless people are a reality in our community. They're there not because of some bad life choice they made at some point in their life, as the Republican think tanks would have us believe, but because of the high cost of housing and wages that have not kept pace with the cost of living. As that gap between wages and cost of housing has increased, the number of homeless people living on the streets has also increased proportionally. And this is not unique to Santa Cruz. We have homeless people in every community in this country. So it behooves us as citizens and our public officials to make policies, enact policies that deal with the realities that people are living on the streets.
We're talking with activist Becky Johnson, and munching sushi on the side is activist Levin. I hope that's kosher sushi there.
Actually, I'm not munching on anything yet. I'm trying to get your plastic container opened up.
Aha, that's one of those problems. Anyway, why don't these homeless people, you know, who are apparently, you know, not wanted by at least not just Don Hubbard, but he was representing an association of people, an association of residents and businesses out there, at least. I don't think he would necessarily say he's against all homeless people, but he doesn't want them living in their vehicles on the streets. Why don't they just go to a state campground?
Well, that's kind of interesting in that the state parks campgrounds have enacted a rule that a person can only pay for a campsite for 30 days out of any calendar year. That certainly, we have had homeless people living in the state park campgrounds for a long time, and that is an option for them. And a person driving by could not tell the difference between a homeless person living in a campground or a housed person staying in a campground. That's been cut off. There are no campgrounds in the city of Santa Cruz. The last one was closed down a couple years ago. We have no place where homeless people could legally park. Well, I should take that back. Churches can have up to 3 vehicles park in the church parking lot with permission of the owner. And
let me interrupt you here. The churches were the subject of a major organizing drive by a group of homeless supporters called the Monday Morning Group, which was trying to arrange a large action town hall meeting and was talking about pressuring the city council to suspend the sleeping ban or end the sleeping ban and also deal with other homeless issues. And one of the large components of that group, this was earlier this year, were the churches. And I guess, Chaim, you were active in trying to involve the churches. Do the churches allow people, most of them, to park in their parking lots? Is that frequently done here by churches? And how many churches are there in Santa Cruz?
There's hundreds. I've spoken to over 70 churches, and they're all very, very sympathetic. But it doesn't seem like they're willing to take a stand or lead people to righteousness in the case of homelessness.
Are willing to open up their parking lots? I know that there are some that do, and of course there are a smaller number that are actually part of the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, which is the city's token homeless shelter program.
Nevertheless, we're not talking homeless. Not every homeless person has a vehicle to drive in and park in, where you could hide his vehicle out in the woods or something like that. Most homeless people don't have vehicles. Most homeless people have their feet and their shoes and maybe a little bit more, but not too much more than that. And if the churches wanted to in this town, not just the churches, but the one synagogue that's in town, the couple of the Buddhists, um, the German Americans Association, the Scandinavian Association. All these groups were taken, you know, they could get people off the street every night. They don't choose to. There's no business in it. There's no money in it. It's much easier to preach on the pulpit, you know, especially on a Sunday. It's much easier to preach on the pulpit to do well, and then, you know, as the hat is being passed, you know, to give money to the church. As soon as you leave the church, you know, let's go back to watching that World Series, and boy, you got to love them Yankees.
And the bombing, of course. Well, of course. Check out the local terrorist hysteria, as I put it in the papers. Indeed. So the question I have then is, we're talking about Emily Riley's vote. I guess there are a couple of bad votes. One was this bad vote on allowing Harvey West, criminalizing not just sleeping in a vehicle, but parking your vehicle between 5 and 7 a.m. in this unusual 7 days a week situation.
They must have the cleanest streets in town over at Harvey West with all this, you know, street cleaning going on.
I have to admit, I haven't checked Harvey West, although I've gotten a call. I got a call 2 days ago from Kathy, Danny and Kathy, who park out there, and they noted that police were running around stickering vehicles, warning people, threatening to confiscate their vehicles and ticket them. There is a crackdown going on, apparently, at Harvey West. Why don't they just move somewhere else? What's the big deal? I mean, it's a big city, you know, and it is true for these people in vehicles. All you got to do is find a church, and you can park in the church legally at night. You get the written consent of the church. There's plenty of churches with big parking lots. What's the problem?
No problem. Call your church and ask them, let me move into your parking lot. Go ahead and do it. See
Actually,
what kind of response you get.
Proposal by Michael Schmidt, who's now running for supervisor in Marty Wormhout's district last fall, which was rejected by the supervisors, was to open up the police parking lot. But this was actually rejected by the city, the police department, to open up parking lot number 10. That was rejected by the fire department, who claimed they didn't have a sprinkler system on the third floor. And then, of course, proposals were made to open up the county parking lots, either at Emmeline Street, which is huge at night for vehicular parking and sleeping, or the county parking lot down by Ocean and Water Streets, which is the government building parking lot. And that was rejected by Marty Wormhout, Jeff Almquist, and all these folks. It's not like people haven't proposed reasonable alternatives before engaging in these kinds of protests at Emily Riley's. Here we have an incoming call, I think.
Hi there, you're on free radio.
Hi. Hey, maybe call up a couple of churches, you know, while you're on the air and see, you know, what kind of response you get. See if you can arrange for some people to sleep. Park in their parking lots.
That's an excellent idea. Maybe what you could do is, if you got call waiting, you could call and we could listen to your conversation.
I don't have all that. I don't have a call wait. I got the other deal, but it didn't work. I've got, where you transfer your call.
And my ears don't deceive me. We're talking to Doug McGrath. And Doug, you've been a member of, trying to work with the Homeless Issues Task Force. Your partner, Marilyn Weaver, was actually on that task force and eventually resigned in protest eventually.
Right. We both at the end, because all they ended up doing was recommended some police type of initiations at the end, and that's really all that ever got changed was
money for the police department.
Right.
Yeah.
Out of the whole thing.
What about Emily Riley? Now, here's a sweet woman who's a baker. She's got a great smile, and she donates food and pastries to homeless people. Do you think that these activists...
Actually, that's not really true. Food Not Bombs has complained over and over again that...
Can you hear?
That she's...
Yeah.
That her second... Her day-old bread is being thrown in the dumpsters and locked, and Food Not Bombs, who I think is reputable, they're not making any money off this.
She doesn't really give out a lot of stuff.
She's not as cool as that you want to think, Robert.
That's really the way it works through her... But yeah, I heard what she said on her vote, and and she did that. That was a setup with someone, you know. And I heard what she said, and I made no mistake about what she said. And she intended everyone.
Well, actually, I think that these two talked with. And actually, I also saw Emily Riley this morning because I was over at the protest between 8:30 and 10:30. For all of you folks who are interested, I think it may resume tomorrow morning. If there are enough people interested, and that's going to be at Mission and Laurel.
Hey, Doug, we need you to come out there and help us.
Right. I'm moving. I really would, and I'm not that far away. We're moving right now, and it's amazing what we got to pack.
I got you.
We're moving into storage really right now.
Well, this is an invitation to other folks. If you can't come to the protest, call in to the show and let us know whether you support it, whether you oppose it, what your thoughts are about it. There are some who say that protesting a council member at her place of business or her place of work is sort of beyond the bounds. What's your thought on that, Doug?
Well, I don't think it's beyond the bounds. Where else would you go do it? That's where, time immemorial, they protested that you got to hit them in the pocketbook. That's always the way it is.
Ironically,
I think you should include at the city council, but the city council doesn't allow things. They're really, when they start shutting down on free speech at the city council and following even the rules of...
Hey, we're in a national crisis here. There are terrorists everywhere. What do you expect?
One day they may be putting us in what do you call it? Those
not one day, Sunday, buddy. Just keep your eye on the calendar.
They'll be putting us in those camps like they did the Japanese or whatever.
Right.
Just because we argue
just
about...
Don't get Arabic. That's my advice.
Because you want peace, you can get
in
trouble,
Doug.
Around here.
Hey,
anyway,
Doug.
Anyway... Yeah, I think maybe just go ahead and call a couple of churches.
Chaim has something to say to you.
Emily came out and really, Emily came out and spoke to us a little bit today, and she really felt that what we were doing, she thinks that we're sincere, but on the other hand, what she feels, she feels that what she's done is very, very righteous, and that she doesn't seem to understand why people don't understand her. And that she's really out there trying to protect the people at Camp Paradise, and why are we out there demonstrating against her? And another point is that
we'll tell her to get in the newspaper and say that she supports Camp Paradise, and that everyone else supports it. Make a vote that's Camp Paradise. They get them another place off the river's bank during the rainy season, somewhere to go, and to keep furthering their achievements that they've done at cleaning up. There's a lot of places they can still continue.
Yeah, another point is that we're not really asking people to boycott her bakery. That's not the point. The point is that we want people to go into her bakery and ask, why is she voting the way she does? Ask Memley, why are you doing what you do? We're not asking her to boycott. We feel she has the right to make a living. That's not the point. The point is like, go inside that store and say, Emily, you're not representing our point of view. You seem to be cut off. You seem to not understand what the people want. That's what we're asking, for folks in Santa Cruz to do, is go over to Emily's Raleigh's Bakery and direct it.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Doug.
I'm sorry. I voted for her, and I think she misrepresented herself to me on what she was going to do for the homeless. I know it's difficult to do anything, but and it's a political suicide. It must be in town because everyone's so scared to do it that said they were going to. I don't know what the deal is. Someone's told them, they'll never get on city council again or they vote for this.
You'll never make money in this town again.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting to me. I actually am a bit more militant about this. I think that... not just Emily Riley's bakery, but I think the downtown businesses should, particularly during the Thanksgiving to Christmas season, be the recipients of a boycott if they continue to tolerate. And actually, I think they have a significant major voice here. The criminalization of homeless people and the sleeping ban and the use of police to deal with essentially criminalizing homeless people from engaging in survival behavior. I mean, putting up a tent in winter is survival behavior. You either have a shelter or you don't. And the Miami courts, for example, under the Pottinger decision, found that police have no business going after homeless people at all unless they have a shelter bed to offer them, because there is what's called a necessity. If you need to sleep, if you need to cover yourself up with a blanket, then you're trying to find a place to do it. And unless the city is prepared to offer some alternative shelter, they cannot simply rule the entire city off limits to people in order to drive them somewhere else.
Wow. Which one of those things you address? It's absurd. You can go downtown and try to drive in traffic. Everyone's driving like maniacs. Everyone tries to speed. They'll go around you if you drive the speed limit here in town. And they go down one-way streets or one right, and then you look and you got three or four cop cars stopped, and they're talking, they're IDing a homeless guy with a flute or something. It's absurd. And then you go around the next block and they're doing it again, and it's pretty absurd. It's, you can see what they're told to address, and I really don't know why. I don't know why people are so afraid.
Well, I think what we need, as I've always said, is the kind of civil rights response that ended segregation in the South and asserted women's rights in the late 60s and early 70s, and gay rights and the rights of the disabled. And this requires community support from a broad number of people, but it also requires recognizing that the city council is not going to do anything. In fact, they're going to close down Camp Paradise, I believe, on November 13th or maybe November 15th when the Armory opens up. I hope I'm wrong, but I don't see any indication otherwise. Emily Riley made a claim today, or guess yesterday or a couple days ago, that her vote to enforce the camping ban along the river, which she voted for on October 23rd, was simply to get rid of the nasty homeless people who were around Camp Paradise but not in Camp Paradise.
I heard that.
And I think that was, if that's true, and I
make it clear, put it in the paper.
She was invited to give a taped statement before the show. She declined, said she was too busy, even though she wasn't too busy to talk to me 10 minutes before. So anyone
would give her a microphone or a place to put it in the paper in town.
Right. I mean, and she knows she could be listening to this show right now. And Emily, if you are, you can call in and say, let me clarify my vote. And that vote is that I did not intend for this to target Camp Paradise. I don't think that they
clarify it for the record.
That makes four votes in favor of a policy that says, we're not telling police to suspend the sleeping and camping bans, but we're certainly not telling them to go after violations on the river of the camping ban at this time. We're telling them to proceed as you would normally proceed, not as soon as possible. As
there are some things in
says
the works,
in a resolution,
in the works by the land people. They got a lot of things really in the works where they're trying to arrange
the community home, the housing land trust. I wish there were. I'm kind of afraid
things are not coming to pass fast enough and everything. They're seeing what they can do.
Right,
all around, just
there are
not
several,
that.
There are several groups that initially took some role in this. Paul Lee's Santa Cruz Service Corps and the Community Housing Land Trust. Unfortunately, the word is now, although I haven't gotten the latest update, are that these groups, maybe they're working on it behind the scenes.
I hope they are,
but it's necessary for the council to give them the time to do this and to recognize that we have a shelter emergency. As we have for the last 10 years, and it's time that the progressives we voted into office make good on the commitments that they either made or indicated that they were trying to do in terms of dealing with the homeless emergency. It's going to get worse, not better. And the shelter hasn't expanded for this winter. I mean, we may have one additional church, which may mean, an additional 12 or 13 spaces for 1,000 to 2,000 total people, a total of 160 spaces starting in mid-November, and 39 spaces tonight.
Sure, and they won't even let people park in their parking lot.
Well, so what about this? So you support the Riley protest? Is that what you're saying?
Sure, I support it. And I'd be there, but really, I do got to get back to moving right now.
I'll let you get back to moving, and Doug, thanks for calling in.
Sure, and, give a couple of churches a call, right? Give them a call.
Well, if I can find a phone book, I might do that.
Okay.
And maybe if I don't and you do, let me know what they say.
Okay. I'll give you a couple of phone numbers. I really am busy.
Uh-huh. Well, let me take you off the air. You can do that, and maybe Becky can take these numbers.
Okay, sure. And I'll go right here. Hold on.
And you are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm Bathrobe's Pierre Robert Norse. And this is your call-in show. So call in at 427-3772, 427-3772. Lines will soon be open. Right now you'll get a busy signal, but as soon as we get these numbers of these churches, we're going to be perhaps requesting some information from churches directly, although Sunday may be a bad time to do this, and so we'll see how well this works. So there is a protest going on at Emily Riley. Should be happening 8:30 to 10:30 tomorrow morning at Laurel and Mission Street. That's the bakery. You can call in right now. You can call the City Council message line, 24-hour message line, 420-5017, 5017, and then you dial, you'll get actually the whole city council. If you want Emily Riley's extension, you dial 420-5020, 420-5020, and then dial extension 7, 420-5020, and then dial extension 7, or if you want the whole council, 420-5017. So if you forget these numbers, you can try also calling the Huff line. Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom is the organization I work with. And the phone number there is, appropriately enough, 423-HUFF, 423-4833, 423-HUFF. And the numbers that we've been rattling at you, some of them are on that line. You can take them more at your leisure and get that information. So I want to now a couple of other things I want to quickly get to before we... Well, other things are happening. Actually, we still have in the studio with us Chaim. And Chaim, I know that you kind of covered most of Chaim.
Yeah.
You kind of covered most of what happened in Emily's today. You got a lot of positive stuff, but you also mentioned that you've had some interactions with some critics by phone. I guess one ex-professor up at the university called you.
Yeah, doctor or professor of art. Jack Sajak, who was a professor of Emily's many, many years ago. And he spoke to me on the phone last night, calling me a fascist and saying that my behavior was terrible and that we shouldn't be demonstrating in front of Emily Riley's bakery, and that wasn't the way to go. And I explained to him that, well...
Did he have any suggestions as to what you should do?
Yeah, just stop.
And
go to city council and, you know, do it the right way. Go to city council and...
Watch them ignore you there, huh?
Well, not just ignore it, but do whatever they want and not have the opportunity even to speak on public policy mm-hmm. while they make their own little resolutions amongst themselves.
Uh-huh. So that sounds like something you didn't accept.
No, I didn't accept that. I asked the man if he knew about Camp Paradise. He said he hadn't. I asked him if he knew about the homeless situation in this town. He said he hadn't. He said he'd been out of the country for years. So I suggested to him that he go to the Santa Cruz Public Library and pick up some tapes of the city council and listen to them and maybe educate himself and find out what's really going on in this town instead of just believing that his poor, loving, wonderful student Emily Riley. It could do no wrong. And we asked him, hey, you know, go check it out yourself, get the information, and then come back. We'll have a real conversation instead of just this name-calling.
It's really hard to confront Emily, even for me. I know when I talked to her today, instead of demanding she speak on tape about this issue that she had spoken privately to you and Becky about, namely that her vote did not mean she was arguing for immediate, as soon as possible, dispersal of Camp Paradise, which she was willing to make this publicly clear. I didn't challenge her that way, and I know that, I guess, after I left, you and Becky may have gone in and talked to her about that, and she declined.
We gave her 20 minutes, and she said call city council and
leave
a message.
Right.
She said she was too busy. It's unfortunate. I mean, she wasn't too busy to stand in, you know, with us and talk to us there, but I guess when push comes to shove, I guess she's too busy to really, you know, stand up for herself and you know, be courageous.
Well, she's been too busy for a year now. In fact, you know, she was too busy before the election to even attend a homeless working group meeting that we were where all the other major candidates attended. She was one of the, I think, two or three out of the 15 that did not attend our group and did not answer our questions, though she did come afterward to talk to the homeless working group. I guess that was when we were having the city council coffee clatch where we tried to lobby at City Hall, and we were barred by court order. I believe on initiative of Mayor Tim Fitzmaurice, but nominally through their employee Anna Brooks, and that court order was overturned 5 months later as unconstitutional.
Nonetheless, we'd really like to see Emily like turn her vote around and, you know, and do what's right. She knows what's right.
Well, I got to tell you, I don't think Emily Riley is going to turn her vote around until there's massive public demonstrations around this issue. And I think that'll the day she turns her vote around will probably be the day that you get a council majority, because she actually, along with Crone, Sugar, and Porter, and then I think possibly Premack and Kennedy, although they have been actually further to the right except on the Camp Paradise issue, generally on homeless issues, you have a majority for doing such things as suspending the sleeping and camping bans, which is recommended by the Homeless Issues Task Force. Looks like we have an incoming call. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, I have a question about Emily's vote.
Uh-huh.
it seemed that even more often than she was, well, I would say slandering people that don't have housing, she was saying she didn't know what she was doing. Now, if your motion is prefaced by a disclaimer that you're competent to make it, shouldn't it just be thrown out?
Well, of course, we have a city council that isn't doing that, and I appreciate your saying that. We're talking, of course, to the chair of the former Homeless Issues Task Force, Linda Lemaster. Hi, Linda.
Hi.
And I think, as I've continued to tell you before, that if the Homeless Issues Task Force people went up to city council as an ad hoc group, former members, and actually called Emily and Fitzmaurice and the other council members on this, you would get some response. But, of course, the rest
of... Emily would...
vote. I believe her vote is predicated to some extent on things like the people who contribute to her campaign, the people who she listens to, like Marty Wormhout, and I would imagine Catherine Byers, and conservatives who were one-time activists and liberals who decided that the homeless issue is poison and it's not something that can be discussed at all. What do you think?
I don't know about Catherine Byers and who her source is for her political decisions, but I just think anybody that makes such a display of not knowing what they're doing is making a cry for help.
You're talking about Emily Riley.
Yeah.
Well, if she were really crying for help, she'd be calling up activists and talking to them. She's not crying for help. She this pretense of of female helplessness is I think an old role, which is which plays well with conservative quarters, makes her look like it's somehow out of bounds to criticize this. But the impact of it is to really hurt hundreds, if not thousands, of people. And I'm thinking not just of homeless people, but of people who are nearly homeless and who face the prospect of dealing with Emily Riley's rules, with Tim Fitzmaurice's laws, with this kind of endless hypocrisy that's going on and that's criminalizing people outside because they are just trying to sleep and trying to survive.
Now, you know that I disagree with you politically about whether these are personal. You know, Tim Fitzmaurice might be the leader in it. Move to change how things are done. Emily might have initiated that motion.
She's initiated
both
motions.
But she got enough votes for it to pass, and I don't think we should put all of the weight on her shoulders. But I still do feel, and this was my main point in calling, that she keeps declaring herself incompetent. You know, I understand what you're saying about helplessness being used by some women, even some men, you know, that cloying ploy.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's a factor here. But she made campaign promises, and that's how she got elected. I mean, I don't mean to dismiss or minimize how critical Cash is to getting elected. I know about that, but
mm-hmm.
she got a lot of votes for a reason, because she made certain promises, including to be humanistic. And she's really not doing that job at all. You know, what gets passed is the majority of the body. And it's going to take all of us as citizens to do anything to change. I mean,
right,
a whole lot of us. But what's she doing there?
Well, what she's doing there is she's playing the Catherine Byers role of the sweet woman who's just trying to do the right thing, who's maintaining a humanistic veneer while essentially holding the line and keeping in place the kinds of criminal structures that make a whole bunch of people who aren't criminals every night. She knows this because she has been well-educated on this issue over the last 2 years. She's come to many city council meetings. She's initially supported David Silva's, I should say, the general resolution, which was publicized by David Silva, for the initiative to end the sleeping ban, both initiatives to end the sleeping ban. She is hardly an innocent. Sorry?
She claims to support.
Oh, she signed it. I mean, come on. She said she would support it at her initial fundraising activity,
yeah,
when she came out for city council. Now, she changed later in the campaign and backed away from it. But the fact of the matter is,
more than backing away, she's totally turned another face. I read her letter in the Sentinel in the winter of '99, concerned that we as a community could do a lot more different things for people that have been marginalized.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not who she is. So why is she so afraid? If it's really what you say, that she's afraid because of who funded her campaign or who buys her biscuits or whatever.
I don't think she's afraid. I think she's indifferent. You know, I think she has decided that, you know, activists like myself and the other people in this studio and probably you are, whether what we're saying is true or not is not relevant. The question is whether it's politically possible for her to do this and not offend the powers that be. And the powers that be not only include her funding sources, but her mentors, the town mothers and fathers that she relies on.
You're saying it's okay with her state of mind to help kill people who happen not to have a lot of money.
No, she won't call it killing. She would
no,
just
but
say,
I'm calling it killing.
Right. Well, I'd like to hear you do that at city council in front of a mic, and that
would
be great.
Well, pay attention. I do that.
I wait to hear that. And I'm glad you're saying it over the air. Yeah, she needs to hear that in front of a public forum where there's a response is demanded. And I think that's why having people at her bakery is significant, because it brings home the issue to her where people come to her, where people that she, you know, thinks she's this sweet person who has no, you know, who has been doing all she can for homeless people. And then suddenly they're confronted with the naked reality of the, what she has, not just what she hasn't been doing, but the kinds of harsh laws that she is specifically supporting. She supports the sleeping ban, and she has, in essence, said that. And when you try to talk to her about changes in it, she says good people are doing good things and then doesn't call you back. And I think that that has been her position for the last 10 months. And it's not unusual. It's also been the position of everybody else on the council. But we're talking about Emily because you've got to focus on one person, and then when you focus on that person, the other council members get the message that they aren't going to skate ahead without real community dissent on these issues anymore, particularly as the winter, you know, comes up. And I say that, of course, but there's only a small group of us protesting now. But I think there's a lot more who are sympathetic to this, and if the students get involved, it could be much larger.
And there's a lot more of the general community, too, who, if they had any idea how many opportunities are squished and thrown away, they would get upset and they would want to do something. You know,
Robert.
I've been meeting people who are recently homeless and how shocked they are of how demeaning and ripping away dignity, you know, simple things like getting health care that you're actually eligible for that can't happen because you don't have an address or you don't have all day to run around on foot to five different addresses are killing people.
I am wanting to respond to something you said.
Well, no, actually, I just wanted to say this, that the amount of people that we have in front of Emily's bakery is not really as important as how many people that we're reaching.
Yeah.
And we have thousands, I mean, there's been thousands and thousands of people driving up and down Laurel and Mission Street there, seeing our banners, wondering, like, what we're doing out there, and are absolutely, like, you know, what is the word, surprised. I mean, this decent Emily Riley, you know, could be so two-faced and be so, like, indifferent against, you know, those people who are just so less fortunate than she is. The fact is, like, you know, I don't think she really cares that much. She's much more concerned with her image than what she's, you know, than doing what's correct.
You've illustrated,
you know, there was one lady who saw our flyer and so forth, and you know what? She said, "I'm not going in there." And I said, no, that's not the point. We want you to go in there. We want you to buy something from her, and we want you to ask her, like, why is she doing what she's doing? I mean, you can't ask her these questions unless you're inside the store. Anyway, we want people to go to her Emily Riley's bakery right now and you know, and buy a donut or something and say, "Emily, you know, you're not doing right and you're not representing our views and our values."
I take a somewhat more militant stance, and I suggest, even though I bought a cup of coffee there, that people go in and say, "You know, I'm not buying coffee from you anymore, and I'm not buying your donuts, and I would really like to talk to you about this issue because I want to patronize your store. Used to patronize it in the past, will patronize it again, but I need to understand why you're doing these votes the way you are, because I can't support that kind of policy, and I feel that, in a way, I've been defrauded." You know, that's, I think, what people need to say to her.
Yeah.
And you know, it's, and she can say, "Well, you have your opinion, I have my opinion, and that's for sure." And if she wants to take a stance that is significantly different than the stance she took when she ran for office, and run on that, you know, and that's what she's doing, and be honest about it, then I guess people can say, "Fine, I will choose not to support your business in this matter because I really feel strongly about it, that you are, as you put it, Linda, putting a lot of people in life-threatening circumstances.
Helping to kill people who have done nothing wrong except come out of this situation poor."
I mean, when Camp Paradise gets dispersed thanks to Emily Riley's whining and failure to find an alternate campground, and that's what it is. I got to say that, Emily, if you're listening, I have not heard you attempt to get any kind of alternate sites for Camp Paradise, simply kind of echoing these habitat environmentalists who want to rope off the Green Belt and rope off the Pogonip and rope off other areas and not actually look for real campsites, and in the meantime press for, you know, enforcement of camping ordinances for homeless people. I think that that's life-threatening for people at Camp Paradise, and I think it's also it sends a message to everybody else that the homeless community isn't worth saving. And, you know, we have the armory. Well, thank you very much.
Right.
You know, and now you're an expert on this subject, Linda. You've studied it, not just at the homeless.
Been homeless.
And you've been homeless. How is the situation? We've seen that this recent newspapers have been saying that the national census claims homelessness is down over the last decade, but the needs assessment 2000, the local census done by the, I guess, what was it, the United Way, said homelessness is up 3 times. Now, what's the truth?
Well,
who are we to believe?
I would say the second is way closer to the truth. I don't think anyone can measure it, quantify it in a precise way. But if you spend any time on the sidewalks, you could see it with your own eyes in almost any city in the country. And because of the cost of housing here, it may be worse here than other places, say Sacramento, but it's not down. People are just not surviving or having to go into deeper cover because it's a popular kind of bigotry, as you mentioned earlier. So a lot of people who are homeless don't feel safe. Even being seen in public is homeless, you know?
We're looking, by the way, for an update on, and I haven't been able to get it yet, on the throat slashing of a homeless man a week and a half ago named Ronnie, and I wonder if you know anything about that, and if anybody else out there does. We got a report, people called in last, I guess it was either last Thursday or maybe last Sunday, about the throat slashing of Ronnie. He's a gay guy, wears fingernail polish, and supposedly was murdered a week and a half ago. Now, I haven't been able to get confirmation from the coroner's office one way or the other, and hopefully at the next show we can do that, but uh-huh. I know that 41 people in the county died last year by, I guess there was 38. By the end of the year, there was 41, maybe more.
That we know of,
and that was...
Most homeless people borrow an address, so how's the coroner going to know they're homeless?
Right.
So it's got to be an undercount.
But that's quite a significant number of people for such a small community as Santa Cruz, and I guess we're talking a large...
a mild winter at that.
Right. So we got this severe winter coming up, and I'm really, quite frankly, worried that Camp Paradise is going to be... the subject of a kind of a diversionary, I'm not quite sure what the words are, it'll be essentially removed by, I'm not going to say neglect, but the police will be told to go in and deal with it. They'll use a rainstorm as an excuse.
Well, they don't need an excuse anymore, thanks to Emily.
Mm-hmm.
The police will go in and do whatever they want to do as soon as they feel the public pressure's not looking right at them. So it's up to us to not only be more vigilant, get more people involved.
Well, Emily Riley's Bakery is in the phone book, and Emily is, I believe, baking there today. She also has a city council line, which, as far as I know, you know, she has a lot of trouble returning phone calls. I found that, in fact, I have presumed that she's making choices not to return phone calls. She has certainly, in my case, not returned my phone calls for the last year, and I think that...
For a year, you have... Wow.
Every month or two, maybe a month or three, I put in a call to her on a subject or other. She never calls back, and it's also been true of such people as I believe David Wizen of the Green Party tried to call her. I believe that there have been other people who've tried to call her whose names I've written down, but I don't have handy here at the moment, and she just doesn't do it. And to me, this is. If you're going to run for city council, your responsibility is to get back to your constituents. Of course, I have the same problem with Mark Premack. I feel that he, in spite of his very good analysis of the Dolphin Lee situation and of Camp Paradise, similarly does this don't call back number. And the community needs to get on people's cases real clearly around this issue, because there is no way to get anything done at city council other than by, you know, 39,000 votes on an voter initiative.
Consistently less and less responsive, too.
Yeah, and we see this with the war, for example. A lot of people, like 750 students, wanted to see I've got the petition here today, I'm going to read it later, an end to the bombing. City Council wouldn't even put that up for a vote. And apparently there are some people at the center that don't like that idea because it's going to embarrass them, or maybe it'll cause a boycott among some people on the right of Santa Cruz. And although the Berkeley boycott was exploded as a hoax.
Really?
The San Francisco Chronicle of October 28th reveals that Berkeley has not at all been impacted by any boycott. Some of the boycott threats were actually done by employees rather than the heads of companies, so they had no authority to speak. and another people have come to Berkeley in greater numbers offering to buy from them because of their vote, mm-hmm. which was pretty mellow. It didn't attack the United States government the way it should have, in my view. It didn't it didn't talk about U.S. foreign policy and the roots of the kind of fanatic hatred that those policies engender, and just the fact that those policies are wrong and cause suffering. And, you know, I know we can't all agree on those issues. I'm not asking everyone to agree with me, but I think the council should vote on them, should bring them up. And I'm just it's another example of their gutlessness to me and their failure to address real issues. So go ahead with anything you want to say here.
I want to make a announcement that's a different topic or subject, uh-huh. and it's a different governmental body. Have you heard that sometime in the recent past, the County Board of Supervisors had set aside money to create what they call a living wage for chore workers and home supportive service housekeepers and the people who put in a few hours to keep their clients from ending up in nursing homes or worse, or homeless.
Uh-huh.
And they're having a hearing. The County Board of Supervisors is having a hearing on Tuesday, November 6th. It's at 7 p.m., and their intent is to take the $700,000 that they said in the past they were going to upgrade these people doing back work from what they're getting. I think they're getting $7.25 an hour. And since a few of these people have worked for me, I know how inadequate that is for rent and such. And they don't even get paid for the time they spend going from one person's house to the next. You know, I mean, a third of their day at work isn't compensated at all. So I really support at least that group of people getting a better pay.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I really believe it's a living wage, but it's better. So I want to encourage your listeners and you to come to that hearing at the County Board of Supervisors on the 5th floor on Tuesday. It's evening, 7 p.m. There's also a message number for getting more information. Do you want to hear it?
Sure.
It's Coalition for a Living Wage at 457-1741, extension 130.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't tried it, but it's on the piece of information I got.
Right.
And I'm going to try to post this at a few laundromats so that the people who are actually stuck in these jobs might know about it, too, before Tuesday. But I hope some of your listeners can pick up on it.
Well, I'm glad that you're doing this in a kind of work. Linda, I wonder, anything new of the Community Housing Land Trust, the group that was going to be bringing back a proposal to City Council through Tom Shaver and Paul Lee?
Well,
about Camp Paradise.
I'd love to rearrange your sentence there, but I'll just wing it here.
Go ahead, rearrange it.
Well, Paul Lee isn't really connected with the Housing Trust.
Mm-hmm.
Be real careful when you're talking casually about this, not to mistake it for the Land Trust. It's a different entity.
Mm-hmm.
But the Community Housing Land Trust is not taking on as a project the management of Camp Paradise.
Mm-hmm.
However, I'm still, and there's at least one other board member still, working with Tom Shaver on helping develop corporate status for the people at Camp Paradise themselves, which could take a while. And in the meantime, Paul Lee has gotten more involved in this process.
Mm-hmm.
As given, I'm being subjective here, as the Land Trust has pulled out,
mm-hmm.
Paul Lee is, the next time they meet is at his house. I forget the time.
Tuesday, I believe.
Tuesday?
Yeah.
I think it's Tuesday.
Maybe it's 7, I'm not sure. But I think that...
So we've created a body that's sort of half and half Camp Paradise people and specialized advisors.
Well, I know that at the last city council meeting, Lee and his board of director people came forward and said, we're willing to put in the money for this project and we're willing to manage it on a temporary basis.
Yeah.
And there were immediately cries of foul from some critics in the audience and some members of the city council that, the Homeless Services Center has rejected this idea or thrown it into a subcommittee where it's not really going to accept it, and there's no real proposal. And Kennedy was saying, even though I support it, we don't have anything here. This is not ripe, as he continued to say. No doubt it's not ripe.
Let's wait till after winter and ripen.
Right,
it.
You got to give it a little chance in the sun before it gets ripe. No question about it. Well, look,
I haven't been paying attention to the formal politics, but I've been following this advising team for the Camp Paradise, and it looks hopeful to me. And they need a place.
Has there been anything new in the last 2 weeks? Is my question. That's what the city council is going to
do. No, just chugging along doing this other work,
uh-huh.
Shaping a corporation that will be Camp Paradise.
Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate your calling in, Linda. Is there anything more you want to say?
No. Okay. I mean, I guess the thing that's on my mind is, while the people at Camp Paradise deserve our support and seem to be a part of the larger community, there's a lot of other homeless people that are in great, much greater jeopardy.
Yeah.
And we need to not forget them, too.
Well, that's why we need
more churches and more outdoor spaces.
We need to get the resolution that your homeless issues task force put forward 2 years ago.
It's not mine. It belongs to the city council.
With such urgency that the camping and sleeping bans be suspended. We need that same urgency, I would say doubled urgency, for this winter. I think the situation has gotten
urgent, worse.
So maybe it's time to get those folks together to call a press conference.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. I've tried to get them together just to think about what we might do, and that didn't even work.
Right. Well, meeting is sometimes harder to get together than a press conference, which actually does something. But, if you just get a couple of them together to hold a press conference, I think it would still be good. Just my thought.
Yeah.
And I will continue to bring it up whenever I talk to you.
Nag.
You bet.
About a press conference.
Otherwise, I see this body very useless with all these good recommendations.
Well, I feel pretty disgusted about the outcome, too, but I don't see how you're thinking a press conference called by a few of the people who are left over from that.
Let's see what the rest of our guests here say about that. What do you think? Would a press conference be good for the Homeless Issues Task Force?
It doesn't exist.
Any thoughts on that?
I think that the issues are as relevant as they were 2 years ago, and if people who were appointed to the Homeless Issues Task Force, and they have kind of the respect of the community, that probably would garner some publicity and focus the community on what needs to be done.
No, I disagree. I think the only thing that's important is that the Yankees and the Arizona Diamondbacks are playing in the World Series, and it's football, and that's the only thing that's important. And drink a six-pack of beer and get drunk and fall.
Well, there's
the
more than two views on this.
Yeah, so there's a diversity of opinion here at Free Radio. We're going to have to leave you now because we have to go watch the football. I mean, the baseball.
Oh, it's everything. It's football.
World
baseball.
Sorry,
it's basketball. It's hockey. It's all these things.
You're dealing with a real idiot as far as that goes. Thank you, Linda, for calling.
Wait, don't hang up yet. I need to tell you something.
Go ahead.
And this is where you should be hammering with your press conference intimidation. Tomorrow, the Continuum of Care.
I like to think of it as terrorism.
As a whole. Did you hear me?
Yeah, tomorrow, the Continuum of Care meets.
As a whole, in the afternoon at the United Way.
Uh-huh.
All afternoon.
Well, perhaps you could hold your impromptu press conference there.
Or perhaps you could find some news actually happening there.
Uh-huh. And what time
is that? That's what the press comes out for, news.
What time is this bureaucrat-heavy?
All afternoon. It's either 1 to 5 or 12 to 5.
And where is this?
I told you, at the United Way.
And where is that?
That's on 41st Avenue.
41st Avenue United Way. So folks interested in the Continuum of Carelessness, as we like to call it, can go on out to the 41st Avenue United Way office. Maybe you'll see Linda out there. And
more important, we'll find out if it's an open meeting or not.
Well, if it isn't open, open it up. That's what I always say.
Yeah, well, I go to all of them.
Excellent.
So somebody new needs to open them up.
Hey, well, hold a press conference and we'll all come. Talk to you later.
Okay.
Hey, it's Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and I'm finally off the phone. My apologies for monopolizing the phone lines, but we do have some articulate people, and I'm glad that they do call in, and I think I'd like to give them time, but now your chance is here, 427-3772. It's your chance to call in on the phone and tell us what you think, and give you an opportunity to buck up your courage. We'll pause briefly with this while you find your way to the telephone dial, 427-3772.
My radio is trying to be free, trying to find its own identity. It said, why should I make profits for some fat-ass CEO? Screw the FCC. Set your radio free. My radio is trying to stay in line, but it got tired of OJ all the time. It said, why can't I tell people things they really need to know? Screw the FCC. Set your radio free. Well, set your radio free, yeah. Screw the FCC, yeah. Get your radio, set your radio free. Set your radio free, yeah. Screw the FCC, yeah. Get your radio, set your radio free. My radio voices heard across the hills of Tennessee. My radio was driving me insane, and then it said goodbye to Philip K. And we all hope his retirement is as pleasant as can be. Screw the FCC, set your radio free. Set your radio free, yeah. Screw the FCC, yeah. Get your radio, set your radio free. Set your radio free, yeah. Screw the FCC, yeah. Get your radio, set your radio. Hail and well, let your radio. Set your radio free.
And that was the beautiful Carol Denny. And the beautiful voice of Carol Denny. Failure to Disperse, Set Your Radio Free. Fine song. She was a longtime broadcaster on Free Radio Berkeley, which I guess now is Liberation Radio Berkeley, which is it was the oldest station before Santa Cruz. Now we're the longest live station.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert. Bernard.
Hey, Bernard. Have you been bothering Emily Riley again?
No, I don't think so. I actually really like Emily. You know, I think she's a fine person. It's just that I disagree with her, you know, with her politics. And, you know, she's never returned my phone calls that I've ever made.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm letting her know this way as a good citizen, you know, that she needs to, you know, deal with my my criticisms. And if she doesn't want to deal with me in person, then I'm going to do a protest.
Mm-hmm. And then you were out there, I guess, for several days distributing flyers to vehicles at the corner of Mission and Laurel Streets in front of Emily's Good Things to Eat Bakery.
Right.
What kind of reception did you get today?
Well, you know, obviously most people that pass really don't turn your... I don't feel like they turn their attention on me or what I'm handing out. However, the ones that do, you know, give me attention, I would probably say it's 2-1 against me, you know, in terms of taking my literature. Normally people just so shake their head, you know, or...
Right, but this isn't necessarily... Is this because they support Emily, you think,
no,
or because they just don't want to be
bothered?
They
just don't want to know about what, you know, they might just think I'm a Christian preacher for all they know. No, I don't think that I can measure it that, but what I am measuring is just the open response of the public, and I find that response to be very, very narrow, especially when it comes to accepting anything what somebody on the street, you know, might have to offer.
Well, so you're... What about those who do accept? Do you get people mostly critical of your position once
no.
they come to know it, or supportive?
Most of them appear to support it. They're very open to reading the literature. They're open to hearing me, you know, yak for about 30 seconds while they're looking at the light, you know, to see when the light will flash so they can continue on driving,
mm-hmm.
you know. But I would say, you know, the ones that are open to receiving the literature are very, very, very nice.
Mm-hmm.
Now, however, I must say something, you know, that I don't want to say, but I'm going to say it anyway.
Go ahead.
Is that the... When all the cars that have the American flags on it, though, they mostly look at me, and they won't let me hand them anything except for two out of a lot of cars that I've seen with the American flag.
You know, I haven't noticed of the whole population of cars that are down there. I'd say it's like one out of every 10 or 20 has an American flag.
That is true.
So it's not really a very widespread practice, either here in Santa Cruz or, I might say, up in places where you might expect it, like Fremont, where I was 3 or 4 days ago.
What happened up there?
Oh, just, you know, a lot of the very... There's an occasional flag on a car, and there's an occasional flag on a house. But generally speaking, this kind of... you know, it's hard to judge quite what the flags may mean. They may mean different things on different people. But I tend to fear that it means support of the Bush administration's surveillance and detention bill, it's bomb the Afghanis bill, it's increase the military bill, it's support us in our crazy policies bill. And I just, you know, I'm glad to see that And then all this under the name of patriotism and unity and supporting the victims of September 11th, of course. You know, that's the big deal.
Well, you know, when it comes to killing other people, that flag is right there. But it isn't always there when it comes to justice, freedoms, and liberation for the people. It's not around there. One of the problems that I've always thought, Robert, is when people are learned to do the Pledge of Allegiance, one of the things is saying that we have justice already. So it gives people a deep illusion that America already has it, when in fact we don't even barely even have it yet.
No, we don't have it at all. Well,
so,
Bernard, did you want to call in about, were you talking about the protest, or did you have other things?
Well, yes, there's two reasons why I'm specifically calling.
Mm-hmm.
One is to ask people to come out tomorrow between 8:30 and 10:30 over at Emily's Bakery, help hand out leaflets and talk to people, you know, about her voting record when it comes to homeless and poor people. And, you know, like if you can't show up for the 2 hours, just show up even for 10 or 15 minutes, you know. That would be really wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing I'm calling up for. And the other thing that I'm calling up for is that I'm going to be across the street from the cinema theater today from approximately 1:30 to around 4:30.
This is the Cinema 9 Theater on Pacific? Or?
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes, Cinema Theater across, right on Pacific.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked people to sign a petition calling for Judge Demsby, you know, to open up the evidence concerning the confession of Arnold Beverly and killing Officer Faulkner,
mm-hmm.
concerning the long struggle of the Abu Jamal case.
That's Mumia Abu Jamal, the man accused of murdering Officer Faulkner.
Right, and
or
as
convicted,
you know,
of murdering Officer Faulkner.
Have you seen the videotape yet, Robert?
You know, I've seen part of it. This is the testimony of the man who said he actually did the shooting,
yes.
of Officer Faulkner, not Mumia Abu Jamal.
I've
seen part of it. I don't, you know, I haven't researched it myself, so I can't say, but I find it provocative and certainly worthy of consideration. I've heard so many irregularities in the trial that I support the city council's, at least on two occasions, I think, has called for either another trial or some kind of additional safeguard in the Mumia Abu Jamal case, right?
That is true, and also kind of giving thanks to Christopher Crone. Christopher Crone, on the urging of the Mumia Coalition, has sent a letter to Judge Demsby urging her to accept the new evidence.
Mm-hmm. But he hasn't brought it up at City Council, has he?
No, he hasn't.
Right.
We're going to work on that, but
right.
But he has sent a letter, and I think that is, it was a very good letter,
mm-hmm.
and I think that is worthy of
mention, huh?
Of a compliment on my part.
Right. Well, you know, I'm always, that's nice, but I mean, he's a council member, and his responsibility, it seems to me, is to raise these issues in a public forum where we can get some public expression of opinion and get a public vote. I'm talking about rent control, I'm talking about real community control of police, I'm talking about homeless civil rights, and of course, this issue with Mumia Abu Jamal, which in the past, you know, got a, I don't know, I think it was a 6-1 vote, wasn't it? Something, I think Cynthia Matthews opposed it.
Yeah.
So I don't see it's terribly controversial, and I don't see what his problem is. It sounds like, and in fact, I find it really ominous that the city council is pulling in its horns on a variety of issues and refusing to address sort of the simple rights of our own refugees, who are the victim of a system of terror, if you will, a kind of institutionalized terrorism, which means they have to worry about being woken up at, you know, 2 in the morning, ID'd, possibly arrested on a warrant for sleeping, a previous warrant, and unable to use police services and unable to, you know, protect themselves by sleeping in groups. And I keep repeating this, but unfortunately it continues to be true. So,
well, the more, you know, and, you know, Robert, I mean, you articulate it just fine. I just think that we have to get more and more people to start telling the council that, because they won't listen to a few of us.
Correct.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, Bernard.
Bye.
And that was activist Bernard Klitzner calling in. He's calling for people to come tomorrow to Emily Riley's. I encourage people to do the same. If you want more information about that protest, 429-8529 is the number to call. 429-8529 is the phone number.
Our phone number is 427-3772 here at Free Radio. And here's a couple of stories, just sort of as a change of pace, on medical marijuana, and some of it is not good news. Here's a letter from Scott Immler in Los Angeles, who's involved with the Los Angeles Cannabis Resource Center. Dear friends, as most of you probably know, the Los Angeles Cannabis Resource Center in West Hollywood was raided last Thursday, October 25th, by federal narcotics officers from the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration, the DEA, over the objection and without assistance of the local sheriff's department. 6 hours and two truckloads later, the LACRC, which is apparently the Los Angeles... Cannabis Resource Center, was without its plants, lights, medicine, computers, medical records, bank accounts, and more. The impact here in L.A. has been devastating already as patients deplete personal supplies and begin to search for new sources. Already our members are reporting difficulty eating, sleeping, and keeping their meds down and weight up. Many have come and left in tears over the past week, unsure what they'll do next. We're doing our best to network some regional and neighborhood support groups, but the task is daunting without membership lists and other club resources seized in the raid. As much as we'd like to continue our humanitarian relief efforts, and even if we could afford to, we are not prepared to distribute non-co-op products that we cannot vouch for the safety of, nor will we allow the government to make liars, criminals, and drug dealers out of us by sneaking around in the shadows, pretending to do one thing while actually doing another. We've come too far for that, and it's contrary to the understanding we have with doctors, law enforcement, and public officials. We've always believed that if we did a good job, told the truth, and acted responsibly, that the government might as well. While we were wrong about the government and our good faith efforts to be forthcoming are now being used to mount a criminal case against us, we have no regrets about the transparency and integrity of our program or the painstaking efforts to undertake to ensure it has been so. On behalf of the 1,960 patients and 450 physicians who have participated in the program over the last 5 years, please accept my sincere thanks for your calls and messages of support, as well as your ongoing efforts to spread the word about this inhumane assault on our community. I only hope that our collective response to this tragedy might be vociferous enough to forestall a broader assault on patients and providers throughout California and the West. In that spirit, we invite you to join us in West Hollywood as we gather for a candlelight call to compassion commemorating the 5th anniversary of the passage of Proposition 215 and the opening of the Los Angeles Cannabis Resource Center on election night in 1996. Please join members, families, friends, physicians, and the community of West Hollywood in protesting the subversion of Proposition 215 and the attack on the Cannabis Resource Center. Bring a candle, bring a flower, bring a friend, but most of all, bring your hopes and dreams for a more just and compassionate America. This is the Candlelight Call to Compassion, Tuesday, November 6th, day after tomorrow, 5 p.m. down in West Hollywood. And I think it might not be a bad idea to think about doing something like that here. And indeed, we have a couple of celebrations or memorials, not celebrations, but memorials coming up. Happy John Dine was killed, I believe it was November 12th. It'll now be the fourth year, 1997. Was when he was shot dead, and that was 4 years ago. That's Happy John Dine, killed by Officer Connor Carey of the Santa Cruz Police Department at Pacific and Soquel. I'm sorry, at Soquel and Front Streets. That's right across from the parking lot of the New Leaf at the bus stop. And he was a homeless, sometime homeless man, sometime a learning disabled fellow who was an activist for homeless and civil rights. Always had a smile on his face, called him Happy John, and I'll have to find the theme song that we used to play repeatedly on the air about him. He was shot dead, supposedly because he had a toy gun in his hand. However, the police report and the police chief's statement and the DA's report contained so many misstatements, and there was never any independent investigation, that there was quite a scandal around the handling of this killing, and there's never been any significant improvement publicly in terms of police department policies, for example, in terms of handling people who are designated mentally ill or learning disabled, the shoot-to-kill policy that the police have, and also some of the circumstances surrounding the shooting, which were questionable at best. and never got an independent investigation by the Citizens Police Rubber Stamping Board, or Review Board, as they call themselves. I believe they are meeting a week from tomorrow, but it may be that they're meeting tomorrow. Usually it's the second Monday of every month. They skipped their meeting last month because they couldn't get a quorum together, which even the board got so bored they didn't want to go to their own meetings. Well, I'm not quite sure actually what the actual reasons were, but they're a board I always try to avoid talking about in any detail because, quite frankly, they just are not worth the breath. They don't do anything other than talk about talking about things. They don't have independent process. They don't hold public hearings, as they already have the power to. They are essentially a fig leaf for the police department, even though the police department doesn't like them, because the police department prefers to provide its own fig leaves in terms of the internal affairs investigation. An internal affairs unit, which the police department has, actually does all the investigating for the CPRB, and the CPRB then gets to look at their report, Oh Joy, Oh Rapture. And we don't get to hear any of that discussion because the CPRB has never had the courage or the wisdom to demand a public hearing, which it has the power to do. They could actually hold a public hearing, but they never have. Instead, they talk about process, and they endlessly talk about process. Reminds me of a bad Green Party meeting. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm your host, Bathrobes Pierre Robert Norris. This is, of course, Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. My broadside is shrinking. I'm on a diet, so I may have to change the name of my show. Watch out. I'm going to be trying to get a report from Camp Paradise, and I think what I'm going to do here is go back to an interview which might interest you.
We're talking to
Pat Brown.
And Pat, we're here in Denny's, and it's about 10:30 on Thursday evening, September 6th. And you're saying that you think the camping ordinance is wrong?
Yeah. I think you should be able to camp where you want and sleep in your own vehicles if you have them.
Now, you say that the fact that there is such a law against sleeping and camping has an impact on you?
Definitely does.
And what kind of impact is that?
Money.
So tell me about that.
Yeah, you have to spend money where you're supposed to be saving it to get a house. How are you going to get a place to live if you have to spend it? If you can't camp, that means you have to eat in restaurants. It takes more money. No matter how you do it, it's more money.
Now, are you indoors yourself or outdoors?
I'm indoor part-time. I sleep indoors now, but I had to pay to do this, and it's on the floor with an air mattress.
And how old are you?
62.
And you're living with I see you got your daughter and your granddaughter here.
Well, my daughter.
Right.
Yeah, and she's living with me right now. My granddaughter, she's living with her father right now.
How long have you been in Santa Cruz?
Oh, my goodness. My goodness. How long have I been in Santa Cruz? Since the early 60s.
And what kind of work have you done, mostly done?
I've worked in restaurants. I've been a teaching teacher's aide. I've been house sitting. I've helped other people so I could have a room. Just you name it, and I've done it. I've done awning and skirting on trailers. I've done electric and plumbing. There's not much I haven't done.
At one point, were you sort of forced into homelessness by the economic situation?
Yeah, about 2 years ago.
And what precipitated that?
The government, more or less.
How did that happen?
I was in HUD.
Uh-huh.
And something came down in my apartment that I had nothing to do with, and next thing I knew, I was in the street.
And then you were homeless?
Yeah, homeless.
And what did you do then?
Well, I went back east for a little while, but I miss California, so I came back and trying it again.
And how are you doing now?
I still am on SSI. I'm a disabled senior.
Right. And what about Camp Paradise? Have you heard about Camp Paradise?
I heard of it, but I didn't get there.
It's right around the corner, you know.
Right.
It is within 3 blocks of here.
You're kidding.
I could walk you down there right now.
Oh, my goodness. Is that close?
Oh, yeah. It's about 10 minutes, well, 7 minutes away by foot.
I didn't know where it was.
It's about a block away from here.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, but you've heard about it.
Yeah, I heard about it. And I thought that was the greatest thing. And I thought they were going to let them be.
And so far, they've been able to struggle to be left alone. They met with the mayor yesterday, and the mayor doesn't like what they're doing, but it seems to have no way to stop them because they have so much community support.
Well, they should get all the support necessarily. I mean, they're doing a great thing. It's keeping people off the street. They're doing everything they possibly can for themselves without having to put up with what's going on with the bureaucratic idiocy about this rent increase we've had. It's outrageous. It's out of sight right now. I know a lot of seniors out in the street, and it's not fair. A lot of vets are out there that have served for the country, and now they're homeless. Is that right?